stop out for Men's Night at Dillon Brothers Harley-Davidson at 174th and Maple on Thursday, March 23rd from 5 to 9 p.m. Good food, cold drinks, cool prizes, and more. Visit Dillon-Brothers.com for all the details.
Nebraska's most listened to all sports radio station.
I like Josh Jackson. Seeing him in person, he's all of 6'8". He's long. He's a really good defender. He can guard multiple positions. He's a guy that I think can improve on a... he needs to improve his jump shot. I think he can. He's got a little bit of a hitch in it, which isn't great, but I think that, you know, there's so many guys that, you know, LeBron couldn't really shoot, and now he's a serviceable shooter. I mean, I could see him being a poor man's Andre Iguodala in some ways. I don't think he should be the number one pick, but I think he's one of the safest picks in the draft.
Live from the Nissan of Omaha studio, Game Time with Nick Baugh.
Lonzo Ball's a guy that he's not a good passer. He's a great passer. I mean, it is elite vision. He's probably the best college passing player in the past 15 years. He needs the right guys around him. He makes others better, which is so underrated. But his shot scares me, and I think he's just an okay athlete, which concerns me a bit as well. Markelle Fultz, the guy, when you watch him play, he jumps off the screen from an offensive talent standpoint. I think he's an underrated passer, an underrated feel for the game. He's a good scorer. I don't like that his team was awful. That's something that that's a red flag for me. That team won 9 games, and he was the man, and they were a train wreck. That's a little bit concerning for me.
Only on 1620 The Zone. 1620thezone.com and the 1620 The Zone app.
Kevin Cougar's my guest.
We had the hottest game at first pitch in the history of TD Ameritrade in the College World Series last night. 96 degrees at first pitch. That set a record. That was exciting. Still had 22,000 plus show up on a night where, you know, you're boiling eggs on the sidewalk out front. Not frying them. You're actually boiling on the sidewalk out front. Yeah, I mean, you put a pot of water on there, boom, that thing's going to boil. And it was an impressive crowd. Omaha never fails to disappoint when it comes to the College World Series. This city loves this event and has shown it year in and year out, cresting over 200,000 fans for something like 16 consecutive years.
Crazy.
Coming to the College World Series, it is the crown jewel of our sporting calendar here in Omaha, and the Omahans once again are making their way out in big amounts.
You're listening to Game Time with Nick Baugh.
If you want to hear an angry ginger tonight.
Third and final hour here on a Thursday. Talked a lot of NBA draft today, and let's keep that conversation Roland. Adi Joseph of the USA Today joins us now. Adi, appreciate your time. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I guess, can you answer the simple question of what is Phil Jackson doing? What is he thinking right now with, you know, putting shopping Kristaps Porzingis around? And do you think ultimately he's going to get moved?
To the first question, no one can answer that. So I am afraid I am not someone who has any particularly specific insight on Phil Jackson, other than the fact that he was a coach, and coaches simply, much more so than general managers, are not going to take a player sort of standing them up. And you know, he probably views Porzingis as a guy who's never won anything, and he's a guy who's coached some of the greatest players of all time, three at least of the greatest players of all time. And for him, that's probably just the biggest thing, is he's essentially looking at this as, who is Kristaps Porzingis to think that he can blow me off?
Right.
Beyond that, I really do think that there's an eventual move. I just don't think the Knicks need to rush into it, or will rush into it. I think Phil's stubborn enough that he may, he's not going to bend immediately until he sees that he has to. And Porzingis is the kind of guy who's going to show up to work and work hard. I really believe that. I think he's shown nothing but a good on-court attitude the entire time he's been a Knick. And even if you're a little upset with him skipping that exit interview, you know, it's hard to blame him given all the other stuff surrounding the team and what Phil has said about him in the past.
Yeah. Adi Joseph is my guest at USA Today. What uniform will Paul George be wearing next season?
Yeah, I mean, there's another one where I personally think he starts out in an Indiana Pacers uniform.
Okay.
Because I believe they will be able to get the most valuable for him by waiting until December or January. I do think that they will trade him because there's not really much question that he's going to leave in free agency, regardless of what happens. So I do think they will trade him, but I think they'll get more value for him by holding on to him instead of making an offseason trade.
Well, I'm not sure. I've seen a situation where a GM was taking and making phone calls on trades up until about 6 o'clock, and then he parts ways with his franchise. Talking about David Griffin. How surprised were you with that whole situation, and do you feel like that's going to be kind of could be the catalyst or at least kind of that launching point for LeBron to potentially leave in a year?
Yeah, I believe ESPN had reported something about, David Griffin's contract still isn't extended. It's kind of tenuous. We're not sure what's going to happen. But we all kind of blew it off. It wasn't a big deal. And then, like, 2 days later, sure enough, David Griffin doesn't have a job anymore.
Right.
And it was just stunning. The idea that this guy who took a very mediocre roster, yes, he added LeBron James in free agency, but almost all the other moves they made were either him picking up random free agents who no one expected much from, like Richard Jefferson, or him making brilliant trades with the J.R. Smith and the Channing Frye deals, where he made this team better with very astute moves on what LeBron needed around him. So
right.
Griffin and LeBron were clearly very much on the same page, which wasn't obvious initially. But then you have Dan Gilbert, the Cavs owner, who I don't think is on the same page with either of them.
Do you think Kevin Love plays for Cleveland all year next year?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I think if they really feel like LeBron is leaving, then they may tear up the whole thing. They may be forced to almost. But in the same way that the Paul George situation, if you really believe that you're going to lose your guy, you got to get ahead of the game.
Yeah.
They're not going to trade LeBron. That would be disastrous, but they may make an extreme move or two. And that could make a lot of sense if they can get enough for Kevin Love to make sure that it doesn't blow a championship
right.
opportunity for next season, which is a really, really big deal. Because if you want to blow the LeBron free agency, the best way to do it is to put him in a position where he can't win a championship this year, much less in 2019.
Adi Joseph is my guest of the USA Today, talking a little NBA. So it's amazing. There was a huge Boston-Philly trade, and with all the different rumors and things that have happened, it almost feels like that news was like a month ago. But who won, in your estimation, that Boston-Philly trade, swapping picks, number one for number three, and another first-round pick? Like, who won that trade to you, and do you think Boston's done making moves?
Yeah, I think it was funny that you opened the segment by saying we would talk about the NBA draft, but of course Phil Jackson and Dan Gilbert got in the way of that.
Yeah, so, they did.
I think the Sixers got a great value. If they really believe that Markel Fultz is a superstar, this was a no-brainer trade for them. When you actually look at what they gave up, there's still a chance that they could have the number one pick in next year's draft and the number one pick in the 2019 draft from other teams' picks, because what they gave to the Celtics was very protected in a way that was very smart. And I think really the Celtics kind of undersold the number one pick because they specifically wanted to jump down to number three. Now, will they jump down even further? I'd be surprised. I really would, because when they made that trade for the number one pick, they could have gotten more from someone else. I really believe that. But they wanted the number three in particular because there was a guy, likely Jason Tatum, who was going to be at number three but might not be much further down past that, who they wanted. So if Danny Ainge goes and turns and trades that other pick, I'd be surprised. But he also made that trade for some salary cap room to get some wiggle room and be able to afford a free agent or two.
Right.
And that's going to be interesting to see how that works out.
Yeah. Are you in the camp of, with Boston, that Boston needs to play the long-term game here and hold on to picks and not necessarily go all in right away? Or are you a go all in right away? You got a window of opportunity. You have, gosh, I think they have like 7 first round picks over the net in 2018, 2019 combined. Like, are you in the school of thought of they need to try and strike where the iron's hot here?
I'm sort of splitting the difference there. To me, for instance, a guy like Porzingis, who I don't know if the Knicks would trade into the Celtics, but given their rivalry history, but a guy like Porzingis would make sense. He's very young, but also very talented. He has more upside than anyone on the Celtics roster, and if they could get him for a reasonable package, that's great. But if we're talking about them trading for or signing some guy who's at the end of his 20s or early 30s, I'm not as crazy about it. The guy who I think is sort of straddles that line is Jimmy Butler.
Okay.
Jimmy Butler is an extremely good player, underrated in my opinion, because he's so efficient. He never turns the ball over, yet he constantly has the ball. I think Jimmy Butler would be a great fit on the Celtics next to Isaiah Thomas, and I think he's a guy who the addition of him could be a big part in them leapfrogging an already dysfunctional Cavs team.
Right. Be interesting to see what happens. Adi Joseph, USA Today. A couple more thoughts, questions I have for you here. Lonzo, Lakers, is it a lock? It's a done deal? That's what's happening at number two tonight?
Yeah, I think so. I think the D'Angelo Russell trade sealed any doubts that we had.
And that you wrote about this, and it's interesting because it involves a guy that went to school just down the road here in Justin Patton. There's kind of a surplus of big men in this draft. It's nuts. I mean, it's all, you know, 6'10", 6'11", five men. And it's interesting because as the game's transitioning away from the old school centers, it's like there's an abundance of them here in this draft. How does all that sort out to you tonight?
I think we're going to see some of them split. I think the ones who are deemed the worst fits for the modern NBA are going to find themselves slipping a little bit. And I'm worried, it's interesting with Patton because during the season, especially during that hot streak he had in, I think it was December and January, where he was really, really good and kind of came out of nowhere as a potential NBA early entry guy, we all thought, oh, this guy can actually kind of shoot, and this guy can actually be a really, really athletic player. But then he came into testing, and he came into the combine and workouts. He hasn't really impressed a lot of teams in terms of being a next-level athlete. He's kind of average. He's not a great shooter, but he has some potential as a shooter. And so it'll be interesting to see how many teams believe what he showed flashes of for Creighton, which is that he was sort of a modern-style big man, versus how many teams think this guy's kind of a traditional big man who doesn't fit the game as well anymore.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. Get you out there in this one, just a real simple one. Favorite player in the draft is who? Who do you just love in this draft?
Oh, I've really come pretty high on Jonathan Isaac.
Okay.
He's the player from Florida State. He could go as high as number three if the Celtics really want to surprise us and take him instead of Tatum. But he's probably no later than number seven. And he's a guy who doesn't care about points, just wants to play some defense, grab some rebounds, and whatever it takes. But he's also sort of an Anthony Davis-esque in that he was 6'2 when he was starting high school, and he was a guard for most of his basketball career. So he has those guard skills, and now he's 6'11". So I really think he's a high upside player who I like a lot.
Adi Joseph of the USA Today. Good stuff. Appreciate your time. Enjoy the draft tonight. And if you can make sense of what Phil Jackson's doing, just let me know, okay, if it ever hits you.
Okay. Right.
So, thank you. Appreciate your time.
Bye.
Adi Joseph of the USA Today. It is, I mean, it's he wrote about it. There's an abundance of big men in this draft. I mean, you got Isaac, you got Markkanen, you got Zach Collins, you got, even guys like John Collins, you have Jared Allen, the center from Texas, then Justin Patton, Bam from Kentucky, TJ Lee. Like, there's just a lot of big men in this draft. And I agree. It's scary. Someone's going to fall tonight. I don't think Patton falls past 20. I think Portland likes him a lot. I don't think Justin falls past 20. That's my guess. 402-951-1620. Brian Munson, 15 minutes from now. He's already texting me. He's got some thoughts he wants to discuss, and we'll let him do all that. Let's take a break. You can email me, nick@1620thezone.com, or hit me on Twitter, @NickBaugh. Coming up next. Yeah, there is an element of one of the players in the draft that I just think people don't value. And I do. I'll explain when I come back.